Welcome back to my podcast, Teaching La Vida Loca, for season two. I'm Annabelle, your maestra loca, and I am ready to kick off season two with even more enthusiasm, magic, and tips and tricks for your classroom. Get set for a ride of inspiration, unapologetic authenticity, and ideas to spark more joy in your teaching journey. I'm turning up the excitement and elated to have you right here with me. I'm not just your host, I'm your cheerleader, and I am thrilled you're tuning in. Buckle up and let's do this. Let's tackle teaching La Vida Loca together. Hello, and welcome to episode 5 of Teaching La Vida Loca. I am so glad you are here. Today, I want to talk to you about comprehensibility and how we find out whether we are truly being comprehensible enough. How we find out from our students whether what we are saying is really being understood, or whether we're just talking at them and they've grown accustomed to it and they're really not telling us whether we're being comprehensible or not. And I have lots of tips for you today. So you can take notes. You can maybe don't take notes if you're driving, whatever you think. But I want you to try one of them today in your classroom. If this is a weekend, what are you doing listening to a podcast about school on the weekend? I'm sorry. I shouldn't chew you out. You're allowed. But try and disconnect on your weekends. This makes you think about school. Might even get you excited to try something new at school. Like, that's why you're listening to this podcast, right? To feel inspired, to feel energized and motivated and joyful. Don't do that on your weekend. You don't want to get joyful and excited about school on the weekend. You want to enjoy your weekend on the weekend. Okay. Rant over. But if you're on your way to school, I do want you to try one of these today. The first is, just stop and ask them. You could be in the middle of teaching, and if you start to see one or two faces that either are looking blankly at you or maybe look a little confused, just stop and in English, in L1, say, am I going too fast? Do you understand me? No? Okay, let me try that. Let me try that again. Just ask them. The more transparent you are with them about the importance of you being comprehensible, the better. Because it is our job. It's our number one job. If we are teaching for acquisition, then our number one job is to make sure that we are being comprehensible. Do we want it to be a little tiny bit above their level, like push them a little bit, where it's just a tiny bit ambiguous? Yes. Yes, we do. However, we don't want to push it to the point that any student who is even remotely uninterested is just going to check out all the way. Because the reality is, this is a very easy class to be able to do that in, right? If we're loading them with juicy input and the kid has learned that all they have to do is look like they're engaged and sometimes move their arms in the same way as their neighbor, if you're asking for gestures, it could be a very easy class to just get buy-in to make it look like they're understanding. But we want to make sure they're actually comprehending, they're actually understanding the language that we're speaking if we want to actually help them to acquire, right? So this class could be really easy for them to engage in only if we're keeping it super duper comprehensible. So here's some more things that you can do other than just literally stopping and asking. I love eyes closed. My students do it all the time. When I taught middle school, my elementary kids are really good about just listening when I say close your eyes. Especially at this point in the year, they know I'm serious. They know that I don't like waiting forever for everybody to close their eyes. So they know, like, they're going to get more class points if everybody closes their eyes all at once. Middle school, I literally used to tell them that teachers, in order to get our teacher's license, our licensure, we have to take a 0.5 credit course to tell if people are peaking, or not. And there's tells, like your right foot might jiggle, or your left eyebrow might move ever so slightly to the left, which sounds really weird, but it happens. I used to literally make this stuff up, and then they would ask other people in the building, and other people in the building learned, like, oh, if a kid comes to you and says, my Aestra says, just go with it. But I literally was so tired of like the peeking. I was like, y'all, it doesn't matter. Just close your eyes. They learned after a few months that it's way easier to just close your eyes, and it's for the good of the class that they just do it. But the point of the eyes closed is for honesty and for kids to feel truly comfortable answering honestly. Because if they feel like the person next to them understood 90% of the lesson, but they honestly only understood 50%, I really want to know that they only understood 50%, because I'm not doing my job. If they were only understanding 50% and I had their eyes the whole time and it looked like they were engaged with me, then I was not doing my job. I was not being comprehensible enough. So I really like to have them close their eyes. When their eyes are closed, some things that you can do to check for comprehension. You can do this at the end of the lesson. You can do it right in the middle of the lesson. You can do it whenever you want, is use a thumb thermometer. That's what I call it. I learned that from a third grade teacher that I heard using it, Miss Lonian, in my building. But they just, thumbs all the way up is like, I understand 100% of what you're saying. Thumbs completely to the side is like 50%. And lower than that is like, I really don't understand what's going on. So I want to aim for as close to thumbs all the way up as possible for my students. Because if not all the way up, I want them showing me like, okay, yeah, I'm right with you. You can also do fist to five while their eyes are closed. Fist to five. Fist means I understand 0% of what's going on. Five means I understand all of what's going on. And then the numbers in between obviously are what they're understanding in between that. And then 1 to 10. I like doing 1 to 10 with older kids because I can equate it to percentages. My littles don't understand that as much, so I find myself doing fist to five more with littles. But with middle schoolers, I definitely used 1 to 10 more because they knew I was going for 90% or 95% comprehension, in the same way that I am aiming at this point in the year to be speaking 97, 98% of the time in Spanish. Another thing I love to do is when my kids are on their way out the door, I have a percentage chart. It's actually not a percentage chart. It's just a chart that Viviana made me, and my Viviana is my right-hand lady in La Familia Loca PLC, but she made me this because I was complaining that I kept on erasing my numbers, because I used to have a number chart 10, by tens all the way up to 100 on my whiteboard that I used all the time, and then I was trying to make another one for my door, and I got this idea from Paul Kirschling. But he uses it on his board to gauge participation and to communicate to kids like what participation or what percentage of the class is participating in answering the questions that he's asking. But then I got an idea from my friend Carolyn Dees, who is a PE coach, and she has students tap a number on their way out of class, or if with her littles, they tap like an emoji for how well they felt they did, or how well the lesson went, or how much they liked the class, whatever it is. So I have a percentage chart up by my door, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, and kids just slap a number on their way out the door. And slapping a number feels like low affective filter, like they feel less worried about kids seeing what they're slapping because they're just enjoying slapping a number. And it's communicating to me how much of the lesson they understood, right? I can use it for other things too, right? Like on a scale of 1 to 100, how much did you enjoy the new reading game we played today? Whatever it is, and they can rate it. But that also helps when it comes to comprehension for them to answer more honestly, because they don't feel like it's about that every single time. Another thing you can do, which is super helpful, is on any written thing that they're doing, even if it's like a short exit quiz, you can ask them, what am I doing to help you understand me? What is something that I do as your teacher that is the most helpful in helping you understand the Spanish that I'm speaking. And it's really interesting to see what kids write there, because you'll learn things, you'll learn that kids are more kinesthetic than you realized. You'll find out who your visual learners are, the kids who say when you pause and point, or when you physically touch a word, or when you write up the translation. Some kids will say when you draw it. Some kids will say when you point to a visual. Some kids will say when you slow down. All of these things really show you what you're doing well in the class, and it can also give you a window into how students are learning best with you. How are you keeping it comprehensible for them? Another thing you can do is remind them how important it is to you. Remind them that it's your job. It's your number one job to keep things comprehensible. So if the goal is for them to acquire, and to acquire to the point of having so much language in their brain that it starts dripping out of their mouth, if you've never seen my sponge analogy video, I can link that in the show notes. But my goal is to, like, for them to read and listen to so much input that it eventually just starts dribbling out of their mouths, like, uncontrollably, right? It's just output. It just happens. If that's the goal, then I need them to be understanding me, because it's a waste of time if they're not understanding. So I just tell them that, hey, you know, remember, it's my number one job. I need to be making it comprehensible. If it's not, you need to let me know. I also, in one class, have a student job. He's newer to school and he's brand new to me. And when I am going way, 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 way too fast for him, he pretends like he has reins in his hand, like horse reins, and he just gently pulls them back towards him. And it reminds me, oh, slow your roll, Annabelle, like slow down a little bit. You might be losing the lower kids. And obviously, this is a kiddo who he has had a little bit of Spanish before. He's super willing to, like, take risks and, like, dive in. He's also joining a more novice class, but he's already catching up. He's doing a really good job. So he's just a monitor to let me know, oof, okay, slow down just a little bit. That was a little bit too fast. And it's in a way that he and I only know. It's other neighbors don't know. He doesn't do it all the time. I'm just keeping an eye out for it. And he just makes it look like, slow down, horse. You know what I mean? Because I get really excited. My biggest flaw in my world language classroom is speaking too fast, because I speak too fast in English. So of course I do in the target language. It's something we can all work on. And I think that the number one best thing you can do is slow down. And that's directly related to that student job. I don't think any of us can go slow enough. When I think of models in my career who go slow enough, I think of Anik Chen, I think of Linda Lee, I think of Diane Neubauer, all of which are Chinese teachers who do an excellent job of just going slow, just really taking breaths, really going slow. And if you've never taken a language that is not like the language you teach, the most powerful thing you could do for yourself is take one with somebody who's teaching for acquisition-driven instruction in a language that's far enough away from the one that you teach that you really get the full effect of just how fast it feels, right? If you'd like the opportunity to do that this summer, the only conference that I am presenting for and working with is Conference in the Cloud. The registration is still early bird pricing through April 15th. We would love to have you. I'll put a link in the show notes to that. But the biggest tip is honestly slow your roll, slow down. I promise you'll be way more comprehensible and kids will notice. They will be so grateful for it. I guess before I go, let me give you a little brain break. This is a fantastic brain break because you can take anything that you're used to doing, whether it's rock, paper, scissors with your hands, rock, paper, scissors with your feet, hand jives, chopsticks, any of the old school brain breaks that are tried and true to your classroom, and you just do it in a circle. What I mean by this is you say, okay, quick, everybody in a circle in 10, 9, count down in your target language. Get everybody in a circle. Once they're in the circle, you step in the center and you very quickly pair kids. You go uno, dos, uno, dos, uno, dos, uno, dos, unda, 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 like really quickly power pair people. Oh my gosh, my husband would hate that. He hates anything with too many P's. He calls them wet P's. I hope nobody is listening to me who hates wet P's, because apparently I have really wet P's all the time. Anyways, power pair people really fast. And then you tell them face your partner, and then you say uno, dos, tres, dale with your hands. Un, dos, trois, voilà with your hands, right? So they face that person and do that. And then they say, you give the next command, which is turn around. So I say in Spanish, I say da la vuelta, and they're looking at another person. And then you tell them to do the next task, chocolate, which is the hand jive. So maybe they do the hand jive. And then I say da la vuelta. So they're facing that first partner again. And I say chocolate with your feet. And they do that one. And then I say, da la vuelta. And they're facing the next partner. And I say, face off. And face off is where we do TPR gestures back and forth. So this brain break is a little bit longer. I might make it stretch for 2 minutes. But it's loaded with language. It's super fun. They're playing with multiple people. And it's a great way to put a novel twist on old favorites. So that's the one I would have you try. That's it for this time. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'll be back next week with a really super special episode with my friend Jess Pissarro. So you're going to love it. It's all about how we can tap into the happy chemicals in the brain to really unlock unprecedented acquisition and joy in the world language classroom, and just how important it is to tap into those. Sending you lots of love. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you send it to somebody who you think might need to hear it, and go ahead and leave me a little review on Apple, because it takes like 2 minutes and it makes me smile bigger than you could possibly imagine. Just take my word for it. Sending you lots of love. Take care, teacher. Until next time, I'll be teaching La Vida Loca, and I am sure you will be too. Take care. Bye-bye.